morning, everyone, and welcome once again to our weekly Sunrise Project call. I'm always so happy to have all of you here, and I hope that this moment is filled. I know this moment will be filled with love and compassion and our mutual desire to heal ourselves, our families, and our children. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I am super excited to have with us once again Dr. Linda McGee, who has been here for 5 years. She was our very first guest 5 years ago, and she's a dear friend and an amazing clinical psychologist, attorney, and nationally recognized mental health expert and speaker. For those of you who have been here before, you know that she's been featured everywhere, all over national press. And she recently appeared on BET's America in Black on the state of mental health in the Black community. She is an author of a chapter on bipolar disorder in a recent book. And she serves at, she's a faculty at George Washington University and the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. She is the former president of the Maryland Psychological Association. And ultimately, she is a leader, a pioneer, and an incredible friend to my family and to the Sunrise Project community. So I'm super excited to have you back with us, Dr. Linda. It's good to
Good
see you.
morning. Good morning, everybody listening. I think me and Kelly are in having good weekends, so we're all chipper today. I'm in my happy place of Delaware, my small little getaway that I have in Delaware. So I'm happy camper near the water. And so this is open mic, and this is open discussion. But one thing that I will say that I am thinking about is just making concrete the notion of finding joy, right? Because everyone is telling us we need to find the safe spots, we need to find fun this year throughout all of the craziness. And I'm trying to think about how do I find fun? How do I find joy? And so I'm just throwing that topic out. Of course, we have no topic.
For today, right. So just a reminder for people, or if anybody's new today, the first Sunday of every month, we have this open session. I think about it as like free therapy with a licensed therapist and in a safe space that's filled with love and people wanting really just to help ourselves and help each other. So it is an open mic. And so we welcome people to come off mic and share what might be on your heart today, or if you have a question or a concern or a challenge you might be facing, feel free to come off and
Or
share.
you're dealing with some of the fallout of what's happening in the country. It's all open to you right now. How are everybody doing?
It's quiet.
Anybody want to start?
Like that Jeopardy. Oh, there's someone. Oh, that's.
Yeah. Hi, good morning from New York. Good morning. Kelly, why don't you check in while people are sort of warming up? How are you doing?
Doing great, actually. And you said that I'm chipper. I think the notion of choosing joy and choosing a self-empowering response in any situation has really helped me because this week has been challenging work-wise in some ways, and yet it's still an opportunity to choose to have a different reality each day. Each day is a new possibility. So, I'm feeling good and I'm feeling grateful and I'm feeling very blessed. And I shared last weekend how the boys are both doing well, which is a blessing because 5 years ago we were not in a good place, which is where Sunrise was born. So I'm feeling really good today. I'm feeling really blessed. And I practice Tina Lifford's 14 practices as a part of my daily life. And I think that's been really helpful for me. So that's how I am. I'm good. I'm good today.
And D, how are you faring?
Hi, good morning, Dr. Linda. I'm doing pretty good. Trying to finish tasks from last week and start tasks for next week. So caught in that sweet spot.
I know you've been doing a lot in advocacy circles. I see your posts, and I want to just know like what's going on in those circles right now. given that, there's the funding is tight, the sentiment is not as friendly. What are you finding out there?
So people are so there are two buckets of people. They're the people that are very well aware of things that are going on and how it can potentially impact them. And then they're the people that seem to not have kindness or compassion towards others. And it's becoming more apparent now than it was before. And, for me, that's really draining for me, that level of acceptance and still having to engage with people who would, there are people that just don't care. And that's a hard thing for me to digest. But and a lot of them are policymakers. A lot of them are the people that make the decisions. They're elected officials that have to make the decisions on behalf of other people. So me being in those legislative circles, I do find that disturbing because we're supposed to put aside our personal beliefs, our personal circumstances, and look out for the best interest of the whole. And I don't see that happening. So I do my part. I make sure to show up authentically and consistent, when I show up, and I feel good about how I show up. So I think those are my personal goals, just to be consistent, to say what I have to say, to make sure that I'm clear on what I have to say and don't appear wavering, because I think that's my fear. I don't want to be one of those people that show up, on stage or on paper when you read back what you said and you're like, oh my goodness, that seemed like I was on the fence. So I'm very intentional about what I say and how I say it to make sure that at least what I really want to say is communicated and not misconstrued.
I think one of the points that I want to just underline is that the confounding thing about all of this is that you see the meanness come out of people. Like, it's like they've been given a license to show it. Now, whereas before they concealed it.
Well, what I've learned is that it's always been there.
Y'all
And
know, that's
that's the
why,
part
absolutely.
that's really, so there's a someone that I've known for many years, just in, one of the workspaces that I've been in. And with that recent conversation with Zelensky at the White House, that there are a lot of people that are angry about it, but I know several people that are defending everything that happened there. And not, people have a right to believe what they want to believe, but the way that people justify things, I think that's what I find shocking. And so, I mean, I think we've talked
And
about this once before. How do
yeah,
you move on knowing that people that you have to engage with are okay with the mistreatment of, of other people?
and not just being okay with it, they intentionally voted for it and they support it. So the thing is that people say, how do you go on? And I understand that. I have a few people that really I've kind of like put in the question mark box. But I go back to this point. Is this somebody that you have known for a long time, and on balance, they're a compassionate person? And then the second thing is what are they expressing a view on, right? It's one thing to say that you think the tax rate should be one thing or another, but I think it's harder when it involves meanness and unkindness to other people. It particularly causes that you might like, or even the notion that we're in this together, right? That we should, be supportive as Americans, as opposed to like, I want my group to be up and I want your group to be down, right? So it comes down to, is this the kind of person that you feel like something is salvageable? Or is this the kind of relationship where you know because of some of the views that they might express or the inhumanity they might express, that you need to reevaluate where you are with them.
So they're not a friend. You know, that's a term that I don't use loosely, but this person is a diehard Republican. And in politics, people don't generally think about humanity. It's about power and money. So this person, you know, so when you look at everything through that lens of how will this affect me financially and how will this impact our country in terms of power, it's easy to make those decisions. So this person has always been on the side with the money. So, but you know, I do want to make it clear, people, you know, you can be for or against Ukraine, you know, whatever it is you want to do. My issue was how a guest in our country was treated. And I don't think people know how to separate the two things. You know, there's a way that you treat other professionals even when you disagree with them. And it was public. You know, it was a public display. And I don't think we're all, even though we're all in the same country, we see the same things, but we don't see the same things, if that's what makes sense.
Positions have hardened to the point where psychologically and sociologically, we're not seeing the same thing, right? We literally see the image in front of us, but what's transmitted through our brains is sort of wired into particularly some people's sort of hardening of a position around an issue or a person. And so the perspectives are completely different. You know what, D? I didn't even know we would go there, but I'm glad that we did because it's a part of psychology to talk about how people take in information, how people soak in misinformation, right? You know, to me as a psychologist, that's one of the most frustrating things about what is happening in the last few years in this country is the level of misinformation that it gets out there, it's put out there deliberately to misinform in order to achieve a goal or an aim. And it's particularly difficult for those of you out there that are listening to combat misinformation. Truth is not an effective weapon against misinformation. So we logically say, no, the deficit went up during that time. Like we try to combat it with truth. But the whole point of misinformation is that it pulls people in a direction, and it pulls you away from evaluating information and sources of information in a prudent way. It is meant to program you. During someone is said on the line that all I'm angry about what this person, the leader, is doing to our country. The last time I was here, Kelly, I talked about feeling that
Yeah.
and owning that anger, right? It is for real. It is there. And do not eat it up. Do not drink it up. Do not smoke it up. Acknowledge it. And then try to figure out what to do with it.
Right.
You know, how do you channel that anger toward the incivility, the unkindness, the inhumanity, the unfairness. What do you do with that? And I think ultimately, the greater minds that I know exist on this call, and that are out there channeling those to some kind of positive end. And so that's kind of the bookend of my lead in, which is to talk about joy, right? How can you continue to live your life? How can you find joy when the world does not look the same, right? But one of the things, Kelly, that I took out of COVID is I suspended my life too much, and I didn't try to. Those years just seemed like a blur to me, right? And I didn't find joy.
Right.
But Anything you have, Kelly, before
think
we
a
go
big
on with the
part of finding,
comments?
yeah, for me, big part of finding joy is knowing that God is in charge and that all of us are divinely ordered to do what's already planned for us. And so even the clown that's in office, and I shouldn't say that, but I can, it's just the truth. For me, it's the truth. I believe that God has planned this all. And so our job is to continue walking in faith that there's a power that's bigger than us that's moving our steps. And we have to follow those steps and make a choice to be positive. That's how
Be
I feel.
right. Be positive, and the message that has also come to me is to continue to use my gifts. Everybody listening, everybody around you, they have a gift. They have a weapon. They have a power that they bring to this situation. And in channeling the anger and the frustration is to figure out how you can use that power, that talent, that gift that you have to benefit us, to help us, to figure out how to fight. One last thing. Go ahead, Kelly.
I was just going to say also the other thing that you asked what I do. I really work on like Dr. Vicky and soul wealth, some of the soul wealth principles that she has shared many times in her organization. Soul wealth, like working on my soul and my spirit. And then, so I love Dr. Vicky's work. And then Tina Lifford, I've talked about at length, and she was here with us last week. And she really has done a major transformation with me doing the work on myself, but her inner fitness journey and working on my inner fitness, just like working on external fitness. I think that has been transformational for me. And but the first big piece is choosing to walk in the space of joy. That's a choice. And it's a mindset. And I think that the person that put in the chat how hard it is seeing what's happening in the world, it is really hard. And yet, it's going to pass. We're going to get through it. We're going to get on the other side of it. And sometimes getting to the other side has a really, it's a journey through hell sometimes. And so, but we have to go through that journey to get to the other side.
Another thing that I was going to add earlier about staying on point and on purpose is that a lot of this that is happening is meant to throw us off joy, throw us off track, distract us. And I did, Kelly knows that I haven't, for various reasons this last year, I haven't been out on the road doing the normal speaking and training that I did, and I just started back. And I got in front of my first audience where I had to talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I was sleepless the night before thinking about how I was going to introduce this talk and how I was going to, I mean, I knew I was going to do it. I knew I was going to train the whole day. Then I thought when I took the stage to train, 500 or 600 psychologists, is that no matter what happens, the children and people around you deserve to be treated in a humane way.
Yes, and
And
respectful.
so our message is undimmed. It
That's right.
is unbowed. We have the obligation to still speak that truth.
That's right.
There are people out there that are relying on you to do what you are, your purpose is.
Right.
Right, they're still relying on you to take the hand of the powerless.
Right.
So remind yourself of your power the next time you're in a meeting, the next time you're before an audience. Many of you garner boardrooms and conference rooms and pulpits. Make sure that you're continuing to have to take up where your purpose is, to defend the powerless, to seek justice. And even in, if you think about it psychologically, one of the ways that you combat trauma and one of the ways that you combat racial trauma is that you help yourself and other people seek justice and redress. So,
Exactly.
I mean, basically, to say that in a more uneducated way, keep pushing.
That's right. That's right. And I think it's keep pushing. It's also keep, I love what you just said, because as you know, that's what we would do a lot together and working on people that are this or maybe marginalized communities
You and
are
I, yeah. You and I
avoided.
had a conversation about this, Kelly. We decided about Sunrise that we don't know where Sunrise is going to end up, right? But we had a very good conversation at last week where we're like, we're gonna take Sunrise where it goes.
That's right.
You know?
Very organically, and that's
Yep.
what feels good to me.
We're gonna
Nature.
take it where it goes. We know that the divine intervention is going to take lead this to a positive place. We'll get to the chat, but someone has their hand up, and I just want to have you all you speak. I thought I saw someone's hand up.
I don't see the hands up. I do see a question that says,
Okay.
how do we deal with racial battle fatigue?
You take a
Racial.
break. You say no to that one project. And don't you take a break, you say no, and you don't feel guilt and shame about it. Because we talked about this in a thousand different ways on Sunrise. You have to put the oxygen mask on yourself first.
Absolutely.
If you let yourself get to the point where you can't function, then what good are you going to be in terms of the people around you, in terms of yourself, in terms of the people around you? So you take a break, you say no emphatically, right? At this time, I can't do that. The person who asked the question, I had to say no to something that I had already said yes to, and it really has had a pretty big impact, but I had to say no for myself. And so what I did is I told them, because of, my mental health and well-being means that I cannot do this. And I had to take the blowback, but mentally and physically, I just couldn't do it. And at the age that I am, I had to decide, is it them or is it me? Right? So.
Absolutely. Can I just build on that no thing? I heard someone say, maybe it was here. I think it might have been Tracy Berry, or maybe Stacy. I can't remember, but they said my no is an opportunity for someone else's yes.
Yes.
That's a great thought for me because I've said no recently to three different people and yet referred them to other people. So hopefully
Right.
that person can say yes, which is a blessing in terms of a new business opportunity that I
Right.
couldn't take on or I chose not to take on. And like you said, it's for my mental well-being, for my health, being able to sleep, which is still a challenge. So yeah, I think the no piece is really, really big. And I love how you said saying no without guilt or shame. That's really important.
I'm still working on it, and I know that people that are listening are still working on it, but at least now that I'm aware of the part of the reason why I don't say no is that I think I'm going to be judged. I think I'm going to, in my mind, I think that they'll think that that I'm weak or that there's a problem. And so those are all internal things. That doesn't have anything to do with the people on the other side of the table. That's my own internalized sense of responsibility, and it's frankly internalized trauma that we put our bodies on the line just so that we don't be deemed to be insufficient or lacking or weak, because we adopt that Black woman persona. We don't want to appear that we can't handle everything. Right. Am I getting to somebody on here?
Absolutely.
Is somebody hearing me? But
I
you
see
know, going
people
back to
smiling, their smiley faces and hearts and such.
the racial battle, how do you get through the racial battle fatigue? You say no, you take a break, you go home and you think about, I've been thinking about, like, what is the thing that I can do for myself to help me work through this situation? How can I say no? How can I get more rest? How can I learn how, which situations require me to be involved with, and which situations re require me to look at differently? Every situation at work, every situation with your children, every situation with your spouse are not your situations. They're not yours to solve. And we can really start to think about situations like like I think a lot about having a big family. Not all these situations are my situations to solve. And I'm slowly but surely letting myself not be involved in everything that people want me to be involved in, whether it's a family dispute, whether it's a cousin that needs money, whether it's a job that my cousin needs, or a work situation or work dispute. They're not all your problems to solve. And
And
I think our.
I remember you sharing that around your baby sister who passed away last year, and all the things that, and I'm only sharing that out loud because you shared it here.
No, I'm good. I'm good.
Okay. That was a big one.
And I'm just gonna say this because Kelly brought it up, and I'm gonna keep it real, is that I actually was vulnerable with people that are not close to me.
Right.
And I told them I'm dealing with too much right now. I lost a person who I considered to be a daughter and not a sister, and dealing with health challenges at the same time that I just couldn't, that I needed to grieve. And I actually told people that were strangers to me that I was dealing with on business that I needed to grieve and take the space for myself this year. And I'm sharing that with you because I just feel like there's somebody out here that's listening today that needs to take that time to heal, the need to take that time to cry, to journal, to think, to remember, to find a therapist, maybe. So, think about these things, like, what do you really need? So, I mean, tangibly, I could do the things, but my mind and my body needed a rest this year, a respite from everybody else's problems, and for me to like sort through what I needed to sort through.
Right, because you take on everybody else's problems
Yes.
by default. That's what your job is. You know,
Right.
as a
And
psychiatrist or psychologist.
right. And I will say that we have helpers on this line, and I want to say this directly to you. We are in a state where we don't have enough people of color. We don't have enough people there to serve in our community. So we are running ourselves into the ground. And I want to say that we have people that are leaving at the rate that they're coming in. And we only train a few thousand people a year in this country in terms of psychology. So remember that before you burn out, you got to space it out for yourselves, because you will not be able to serve everybody that's doing, mostly everyone that's doing this now really wants to serve our community. And but I want to say, don't let it come at the expense of burnout. I want to take this last question first, but I don't want to ignore the ones that came before. This is from D. Please share how we work through the issues that we face within the Black community. We have our own work to do and find a way to get through this together without judging and ostracizing. Absolutely true. Now more than ever, we need whatever forms of unity we can get. We are not a monolith. There are many, many different aspects of what we call the Black community. But to the extent that we can, we need to unify. We need to recognize that the power in unity is so far beyond the power of everybody out there being their own agent. One of the things, Dee, that I saw prior to the election was that we were having some harsh debates online in our community about people that weren't working in the best interests of what we call the Black community. By any stretch of the imagination, not even arguably. We had talks about women and the power of women and men not seeing women in roles of authority. We've had some serious discussions about our community and how we treat people that are at the intersections of being Black, like Black and gay, Black and poor. So those conversations have continued. And I think that it's a healthy thing, even though people might find them to be messy. I think it's a good thing that we're starting to talk online, that we're starting to really debate and argue. We're starting to have some serious conversations about economic power. But as Dee said, we have issues. I mean, look, we. A lot of people that are in this country have soaked in the sociological framework of slavery. And that means to a certain extent, we're all traumatized. One of the things that anti-Blackness does is that it is in soaked up in all of us, including Black people. And a lot of the issues that you see that divide us are because we have internalized anti-Blackness. Internalized racism, internalized misogyny is real. People thinking that they can become more powerful if they're more white adjacent is real. And we see not just in the Black community, we also see it in Latino, Hispanic communities also. So the issues that you're talking about are real. I think that we should further the discussions in person, online. But I want to take the one part of your question and I want to spend just a little bit of time on the aspect of judging and ostracizing. This is hard. Emotions are so, I have never seen such emotion from human Americans as I see now. But if we can address issues within our own community, even if we're expressing disagreement, or we think we should go another way, or we think that someone's basically messed up, still feel like that we should try to do so in a way that is respectful. Informational. I remember having conversations with my mother who was very much brought up in religious community, but well, joined religious communities as she was a later adult. And just having conversations with her about the church's attitude toward gay people and, just having gentle conversations with her about things within the Black community that really bothered me, that people still held those views. The last thing I want to say is just kind of to be encouraging. We have made a lot of progress in terms of talking about mental health, talking about what's going on inside of us, talking about the need for therapy, talking about problems in the Black community publicly, where we used to would refuse to talk about it. We are more comfortable with trying to address and oppose behaviors that we think are detrimental. There's been a lot of progress. I think the realization is that is happening now in Black America to a certain extent is that we have to act with more unity. And I'm actually excited by the prospects of what that might mean in terms of economics, socially, politically, educationally. So I don't want to leave everybody with a negative note. I do think there's been progress, and but I still think that there is a need to address some critical issues within our community. And I think economics is one. I think misogyny is another. And I do think that we should continue to have conversations publicly about how we feel about ourselves and what our standards are for beauty and self-acceptance and self-love.
Absolutely. That's great. Thank you for that. I think that's fantastic. I wanted to ask a question about living in a space of possibility versus a space of problems, because so many people I hear all the time are talking about, and it's hard to ignore what's happening in the world. Like, we shouldn't ignore what's happening in the world. But how do we really, really work to live in a space of, good versus bad?
How do we live in a space of what? Can you say that one more time? I'm sorry.
Possibility versus problems.
I mean, this is tough, y'all. Y'all got questions today that are really hard that I think every single last one of us are struggling with. I think that it's not so easy to balance. I think you're gonna have days where the problems feel heavy, where the problems feel tough. I think there are going to be days that you need to put down your phone and stop scrolling. And again, I'm not saying you don't find out what's going on. You can check you can check the internet in the evening, or you can check the internet and you pretty much know what's going on. You don't have to stay with it all day. And the second thing is that choosing optimism, choosing joy, choosing purpose, where you actually are getting out there and doing the one small thing that you can do, you don't, is intentional. And let me just elaborate that a little bit. I mean, like, for example, I'm gonna use Kelly as an example. Kelly works on bringing out the word and marketing and advertising toward inclusivity, right? She might choose to work on a project that pushes that even now. And she might go home one day with an idea that she's going to pitch a corporation on an idea about, or a foundation or a funder on the idea of, like, even now, we're going to focus on humanity. We're going to focus on inclusivity. Well, that's what I mean by picking your space. Everybody is not an award-winning civil rights leader. Everybody's not gonna pass laws. Everybody's not gonna lead a nation. But you can go to your school board meeting.
That's right. Pick your
You
space.
can intervene in a conversation that you hear between your child and another child that is non-inclusive and judgmental and not kind. You can speak out when someone and advocate for yourself when things aren't going well for you at work.
That's great.
You can think about how, instead of just going away and suffering, like, how can I advocate for myself?
That's right.
And you can call Kelly and ask her for advice about that point, right? One of the things that I'm working on is the pride of not getting support, having too much pride to get support on the
Yeah.
issues that I don't do well on.
I've switched my whole world to staffing my life. Someone said, you need to staff your life, one of my friends. I said, that is so true. And it made a difference already, just getting more help.
But don't you think the big step is admitting that you need to staff?
Correct. It's admitting it and then doing it, like making it a priority, because if I don't make it a priority, I don't get to it. And that just, it just falls off the plate. But even that, like even hiring an assistant, I needed an assistant for I don't know how long, but I made it a priority and then asked somebody on the team to help me find a person. But even just asking for help made a huge change. And one thing I want to go back to, since this is a space with a lot of parents, something you said at the very beginning about it's not our problems to fix. I think is really hard for a lot of parents, particularly with adult children, where, I'll share something because people know I share, but one of my wonderful children is doing some applications for something, and they were due, let's say at midnight, a particular day. And so he was sending out his requests for recommendations at 9 p.m. And And I literally, it's
You
been,
gotta laugh, y'all. You gotta
yeah,
laugh.
but it's been such a journey because for the last several weeks, I've been saying, can you send me the essays? I'd love to look. Can I help you? I've been asking, can I help? One word response, no. Or just no walking away or just funky or whatever. And so the new Kelly is just like, okay. And I leave it alone. And so that is really, so what you said earlier is our people have to work through their own thing. It's hard when you're a parent and you see, it's like you have a drone and you see the two trains coming, or it's like that Perfect Storm movie. You see the storm happening, but the person that's down there in it is not listening to you, wants to do it their own way, whatever. And the work for parents is to allow them to have their own journey and to allow the trains to keep coming. And so they
You know,
work through
some of
that.
us, and this is kind of historical too. Like, I've argued and I maintain firmly that, like, letting the child go at 17 to 18 is probably the way we had to come through our history doing, but it's not really backed up by science. It's not really backed up by trauma theories. But by the same token, on the other hand, in other words, that an 18-year-old needs support. But on the other hand, sometimes I feel like I have a child that's mid-20s. Kelly has a son that's just below that. Sometimes I feel like that we are intervening in decisions that we made all on our own. We took the knocks for in our mid-20s, and we're still kind of like intervening. And you understand what I'm saying? Like, Kelly, the example that you used, Kelly, was with your younger son. So, you know, like that's a different, maybe a different situation because he's still in college. But you know, you there's nothing you could do with a child other than just go in your room, close the door, say a prayer. And yeah, D, I get it.
Yes, read
I
that out
definitely,
loud. That's a very important point. What she says is true. She says it's hard to watch or allow them to.
it is seriously hard to watch. I mean, who among us, who on this phone line has not had a situation where you see the storm coming, you see the baseball coming at your child's face, and you might have to deal with the consequences of their decision. I mean, I think everybody on here has seen that. And you know that it's gonna fall on you, right? Because if they don't get that job or if they don't get in that school, then that means you might have to step up. You might have to pay more money. You might have to support them, even when you think what they did was not smart.
Correct.
It is very, very hard to do. I'm, you know, as guilty as the next person. What I've been trying to do lately, though, is really editing what I say. Editing my intervention, and praying about the situation, as opposed to me always trying to run in and rescue. Because I do think that it depends on who your child is and their state of mental health, their state of cognitive health, their, you know. So I'm not giving general advice here. It's very much you have to look at the situation that's going on with your child. A lot of times we'll have these discussions online, and then I'll talk to a few of you offline. And I'm like, well, that has nothing, what we talked about on the show has nothing to do with your situation, right? Because your child is mentally compromised, or they're in a state that they can't make good decisions. So this is, you know, your mileage may vary. Your situation may not be applicable. You might have to intervene. But when we're talking about decisions like that, you know, like Kelly's son, he will, you know, whatever it is he's applying for, he will get something. He will
Absolutely.
make a way. He will find a way. If he doesn't do it this year, then he'll do it in January. And some of these things we have to start like letting them sort of see that if you wait until 9 o'clock on the last day to ask a person that is not your mother
Correct.
for something, that it may have consequences.
Yeah, that part. So, and I think all just it, every choice has a consequence, right? Every choice is an action. a reaction to the action. So, yeah, that's really
But I used to work for this person. I've said this on here before. He used to always say it at the school where I work, we want our kids to be problem solvers, but we don't want them to have any problems.
correct. That's the problem. And then we handicap them. We do too much. At least I know I was guilty of that. I did everything for them. And so what happens when you do everything, they don't learn how to do things themselves. They don't know how to deal with the problems or the challenges, because that's at least in my house, that's what happened. I was the problem solver. And then
Right.
they don't know how to do it when they're
I mean, and I think we do differently. I'm gonna step in here because Kelly and I have boys, but I think we act differently with between boys and girls. There's an expectation that girls will manage things a little bit better. But when I'm in exercise class and I hear women talking about sending their sons' resumes out even when they're in their 30s.
Yeah, that's a no-go for me. People used to do that in my one of the organization chapters I was in. They would send the resume and say, "Do you have any jobs for Johnny?" And I'd say, "Have Johnny reach out." And this is a negative on your part. I don't want it should be a letter from your child.
No one wants to hear from the parent of a 25-year-old.
No.
Even though a lot of the corporations are still gearing, well, they used to gear themselves around kids maturing later. I still don't think it's a good thing to have your parents involved once a child leaves college in anything.
Even in college, I
Yep.
think so. There's a few
They don't
people.
want to hear from the mothers. They want to hear from the kid or the young man or the young woman.
And the key there is to ensure that the young person knows how to communicate. And if we haven't modeled communication in a good way, then that's often the challenge too, because they don't know how to communicate in healthy ways. There
Well, I
were.
mean, but that's like a training process. Like I talk to people that are frustrated and fed up with their kids, right? Either because they're not independent, or obviously they're dealing with issues of mental health, substance abuse, those kinds of things. But you can't, and then they're just like, I'm done. Right. But I'm like, okay, but you have to, and we talked about this before, you need a bridge. Like, you can't just say, I'm going to do everything for you. You're 21. The day you turn 22, I'm doing nothing for you. Right. The thing is that that kind of autonomy, independence, and agency is built over time. Where, like, I always use the analogy of going to the doctor for the first time by themselves. Right? Like, you start to say, okay, this year I'm gonna send you back by yourself to talk to the doctor, and I might talk to the doctor later. The next year, you sort of like let the doctor take the lead. You don't ask any questions. You still stay out in the waiting room. The next year, you might make the appointment and send your child by themselves to the doctor. They drive themselves to the doctor. And I can tell this story, even though I don't tell a lot of Darian's business online. I mean, he called me the first time he went by himself like six times, right? I mean, it's not, so you build that independence up over time, and then you get to the point where you're suggesting to them, are you getting physicals every year? You should continue to get a physical every year as an adult. But you build that autonomy. You give the child confidence that you believe in them. And of course, this is dependent on where your child is, right? You can't, if your child has never done anything like this, or they're dealing with some sort of social issues. I work a lot with kids who are 17 and 18 years old, and my whole goal is to get them to go order their own food because they're dealing with social difficulties. So, we practice them going and ordering their own food at Cop, right? So you have to take them where they are and build independence. Even when a child is dealing with social issues, they may not ever be that social butterfly. That's not the goal. The goal is to like make them more independent, help them to adapt to a world that is, adapt as best you can to a world that is sometimes unfriendly.
Right. That's so good. I think, and what Dee just said, it's finding that balance between doing too much and not doing enough is really critically necessary. So
Oh yeah, I mean, oh my goodness. I'm so glad you put that. That is our trauma response. And we sometimes go overboard. We do too much, as the kids say, right? Yeah, I had a lot of issues around economics. And I didn't, I had student loans and I had all these things, and I just didn't want him to have to go through any of that struggle, any of that. I'm in grad school and I can't pay my rent, and it's the fifth of the month, and the rent, all of these things. But to understand that that might have you acting in ways that are not in the best interest of your child. And you might go overboard, you might do too much, you might pay for too much. You might not ask them to get a job when they really should start getting a part-time job and figuring out the economy and those kinds of things. So yeah, definitely D. We're really touching on some really soft points in this hour about like how we were reared and the trauma that was surrounding that.
We're almost out of time. I want to make sure that if there's anyone else that wants to say anything and you want to come off of mute, you can
Oh,
hit star
yes.
six. I know the whole hour
Please.
gone away quickly, but if anybody has a last question or thought, feel free to come off of mute if you choose. If not, I will ask a last question, Dr. Linda. My question is, how give us like a couple of tips on how we can protect our energy and prevent burnout.
You start the day with reinforcements. So whatever you can do for your mental, spiritual well-being that feeds you, start your day with that. It's almost like a fortification. If it's your prayer, if it's your meditation, if it's your yoga. For me, sometimes it's all of the above before I can get to the point where I can care for people. I have to fortify myself, and make some intentional choices. Like today, I am not going to talk to my neighbor who is a negative Nelly, who is, somebody that I disagree with on everything. Today, I'm going to call Kelly because Kelly always is like, hey, Linda, and building me up and making, so making intentional choices about when your phone rings and it's somebody that you know you shouldn't be dealing with because you're hanging on by a thread, pushing the send a voicemail when you have to. Being so fortify yourself, be intentional about your time, because things the information age means that we could spend our whole day consuming information and really not doing any of the things that we make intentional choices about. And three, surrounding yourself with people, things that are supportive. And that those are all take a little bit of work. But those are the days where I feel like that I'm functioning best, is when I have a when I fortify myself, when I make sure that I'm acting on purpose, I'm surrounding myself with people that are are positive. And sometimes I do better when I have things that I want to accomplish. The one or two things that I have to accomplish today, where I have them organized, where I can get them done.
That's wonderful. Thank you, and the perfect summation of this open session today. So I appreciate you, Dr. Linda, always. You've been in my life forever, it feels like. And I love and appreciate you.
About what, 18? 19 years?
Yes. Well, no, 22, class
What?
22. I met you at a sister's
22, yeah,
house. He was
22
in the
years. So,
carrier.
yeah,
I
it
think
is a lifetime.
he was 6 weeks old. I think I was overwhelmed. I don't think I was overwhelmed and freaked out about having this little baby. I was like, what am I doing? And I walked into a sister mom's meeting and you all embraced me and said, it's gonna be
They
okay.
say you have friends for a reason, season, or a lifetime. And so we're in the lifetime category.
Absolutely. I love that. Thank you so much for being here always. Every month, and for being my friend. I love you so much. Appreciate
I
you.
love you too. Thank you.
And Dr. Vicky
And I
will.
love all of you out there.
Yes.
Thank you for coming.
Absolutely. And Dr. Vicky will close us out in a prayer today. She is back from her fabulous cruise and here with us. So thank you in advance.
Thank you, Kelly. Thank you, Dr. Linda. As always, liberating is the word that comes up for me, and I'm sure so many of us on the call today. God, we thank you for this is the day that you have made, and we are grateful for the opportunity to rejoice and be glad. Thank you for the wisdom that has been poured into us to get us through another moment, another day, another week. Thank you for Dr. Linda and for Kelly and Dee and the Sunrise Project, for every household that is represented on this call, for every mom, every dad. God, we're grateful for information, grateful for the wisdom that you pour into us on a weekly basis. Thank you that when we're overwhelmed, we have permission to pause, to rest, to relax, to release. God, just thank you that we don't have to carry these burdens alone, that we have grace to help when we need it. And so we give you glory for the privilege to be a part of this amazing and beautiful community. We thank you for just the gift of having one another's experiences, for a safe space to be transparent, a safe space to be vulnerable, a safe space to say, I don't know. God, we just give you glory for all of these things. Bless us to come back together again next week and to invite someone or two or three to become a part of this empowering community as we move through these spaces of uncertainty, of chaos, of not knowing what's going to happen. But what we do know is that if we continue to trust in you with all of our hearts, and lean not to our own understanding. We acknowledge you in all of our ways. Your promise is that you will direct our paths. So thank you for ordering our steps and keeping us safe as we journey through each and every day. Bless our children, bless our families, bless our households. And we give you glory again for all of these things. In your name we do pray and give thanks. Amen.
Amen.
A day.
Thank you, Dr. Vicky, and thank you, everybody. Have a beautiful, productive, peaceful day, and we'll see you next Sunday, 9 a.m. Eastern.